Good afternoon, everyone. So in this next portion, the application and the presentation, sorry, we'll talk about the application process. We've already talked about it a little bit in the overview, so I will not belabor those details, but I will go through in some precision the actual requirements for the Part 1 and the Part 2 application before going on to talking about bidding in the auction. So first, to get an account for the online application, to access the application website, if you have not done so already, so for new bidders, you can go through the normal website, aapohiocbp.com, and under the Contact Us tab, the last link on that tab is where you can click to open up a form where we will ask you for the information necessary to register for an account. So you can do it that way, in which case you'll be asked for the company name as well as contact information for one individual. You can provide a information for a secondary contact as well, or you can just email that information directly to us at aap-cbp@nira.com. So again, what we need is the company name, the name of a contact with phone, an alternate number if you can, as well as an email address. Once we have that information from you, then we will be able to issue login credentials so that you can access the application website. For returning bidders, you will receive those login credentials. So this is a reminder. I know we've talked about the fact that we are changing the application platform a little bit, not from a user point of view, but just kind of on the back end, but that will not change your login credentials. So you will receive that reminder from us for your login credential by email. Now, those login credentials will go to the representative that had been named previously, so that if there have been changes in that regard, again, please contact us so that we can have the login credential provided to the right team. A few highlights on the application process. One is that for returning bidders, you will get your login credential as a reminder by email from us, and the application process is streamlined in that we do keep some of the information that you would have entered, as well as some of the additional forms that you will have filled out. So although it is an online application portal and you will provide your information online, you will also be uploading documents, including inserts, and I think we've described that already, that are a separate Word form that you can fill out and then print, sign, scan, and upload back to the application website. So some of those inserts are retained from the information that you provided previously, and some of the information that you entered in the form is also retained. So that should be fairly efficient for returning bidders. I will talk in the next slide a little bit more about the inserts. The other feature that I want to flag for you is that the Part 1 application is your opportunity to provide any comments on the pre-bid credit instruments. But before you do that, there is a list of acceptable modification to those credit documents that has already been made available by AP Ohio and posted. So you want to consult that before you make your own comments to see whether any of the modification that you wanted are actually already acceptable. So we've mentioned a couple of times the inserts. So here's a list of the inserts for the Part 1 application. And there's a couple of different type of information here. The name of the insert, which is fairly descriptive, it, under the name of the insert is a note as to whether that insert is retained for returning bidders, meaning that returning bidders don't have to fill it out all over again. And it also provides you with whether the insert is required of all bidders, optional, or whether it only applies to some bidders that are in special circumstances. the first insert is for an officer of the bidder to designate an individual named a representative that will represent the bidder in the application process and in the auction. And that's required of all bidders, but it is returned for returning bidders, so no need to do it again unless, of course, there is a change in personnel and you have a new person serving as representative for this auction. The second insert is where the representative acknowledges his or her responsibilities as representative in the auction process. That is also retained, but then again, if there is a change in the individual who serves as representative, then this will be required. I'll skip one and go to the legal representative because that's also retained for returning bidder. That's to provide contact information for an individual or a company that agrees to accept service of process on behalf of the bidder. It's also required of all bidders and also retained for returning bidder. Going back to, and they're all labeled, so going back to P1-3, so before legal representative, you have the opportunity to designate additional individuals who will be getting electronic communications from the auction manager, and those individuals that are part of your bidder team are called nominees, and you may, if you wish, designate those additional individuals using insert P1-3. Also required of all bidders is P1-6, so those are a number of certifications that you have to make in the Part 1 application, and we'll go through some of that in the slides that follow that detail the requirements. All of the other inserts are only required if you are in specific and special circumstances, so P1-5, for example, or for bidders that are not yet PJM load-serving entities, P17 for applicants that are either foreign or relying on the financial standing of a foreign guarantor for P1-8, and finally the last inserts are for bidders who want to apply under a bidding agreement. So all these additional forms will be used in the part that can be used during the Part 1 application will be posted to the application website. So talking now a little bit more in detail about the requirements for the Part 1, they're fairly straightforward. So first are requirements to provide contact information for the representative first, because the individual represents the applicant or the bidder in the auction and in the application process in particular for the legal representative and for the nominees, as we mentioned on the prior slide. We also have the requirement that any bidder must, by the start of the supply period, be qualified as a market buyer and a market seller in PJM and be qualified as a load-serving entity. So either the bidder can meet those requirements right away and provide documentation to that effect through the Part 1 application, or the bidder will have to sign a certification that they understand those requirements and they will be able to meet it by the start of the supply period. There are also a number of certifications that have to be made in the Part 1 application, and that, again, is going to be through that P16 insert. Some of the certifications that have to be made is that the bidder agrees to the term of the main documents, namely the Master SSO Supply Agreement, as well as the CBP rules. So the CBP rules is the document that details the rules of the auction and the requirements of the application process. You'll also be required to certify that you will keep information that's related to the auction confidential. The Part 1 application also asks for financial information, such as the annual and quarterly financial statement, either of the bidder if you're relying on your own financial standing, or that of a guarantor if you're relying on the financial standing of a guarantor. And for that entity then, you will be asked for financial statements, for credit ratings from the major credit issuers, as well as for additional information if you are a foreign entity or relying on the financial standing of a guarantor. Now, all of that information is going to be used to do a creditworthiness assessment under the same terms as the terms of the master SSO supplier agreement, and you will be provided with the results of that creditworthiness assessment so that you know where you stand in advance of the auction with your Part 1 notification. As I mentioned when I noted that we would be posting the list of acceptable modifications of credit documents on the CPP website, the Part 1 application is also your opportunity to request modification to those pre-bid credit instruments. Of course, that's optional, and if you choose to do that, if some of the modification that your financial institution needs, for example, are not already part of the acceptable modification of credit instruments, then you can submit a red line of the credit instrument via upload to the application website. And if we accept the modification that you are proposing, then it will become part of the acceptable modification of credit documents so that a modification that's accepted for one bidder is accepted for all bidders. As was mentioned, the Part 1 application is to go from being an applicant to becoming a qualified bidder. And if you are qualified following your successful Part 1 application, then you're also invited to submit a Part 2 application to become a registered bidder, to be registered as a bidder. Four major requirements for the Part 2 application. We'll give a little bit more detail on each of those in the slide that follow, but it's to submit an indicative offer, which is going to be a number of tranches at each of the maximum starting price and the minimum starting price. The second requirement is to submit pre-bid security, which is going to be proportional to your indicative offer at the maximum starting price. The third is to make a number of certifications, and those include certifying compliance with what's called the Association and Handling of Confidential Information Rules. And finally, there are additional certification to be made at the Part 2 stage also. Now, we talked about the fact that the Part 1 requirements are streamlined for returning bidders. For the Part 2 application, the requirements for both new and returning bidders are the same. So the indicative offer is a number of tranches. To be more precise, it should represent the maximum number of tranches that a bidder is willing to bid at each of the maximum and the minimum starting prices that have been announced in today's presentation. Where the indicative offer matters most is at the starting price, because it determines the amount of pre-bid security that will be required in the Part 2 application, and it also determines the maximum number of tranches that a bidder will be able to bid in the auction. That is, the indicative offer at the maximum starting price establishes initial eligibility. So the eligibility, the number of tranches that you can bid in round one of the auction. And from there, you can never increase the amount of tranches that you can bid, and therefore it really establishes a maximum on the amount of tranches you can bid any time during the auction. And that number of tranches, as we've mentioned, is subject to load caps. So there is a load cap for the auction of 80% of the tranches available. There's also a credit-based tranche cap determined by the credit rating either of the bidder, if you're relying on your own financial standing, or your guarantor, if you're relying on the financial standing of a guarantor. So that credit-based tranche cap is in effect across all auctions under the CBP currently and is given by the table that is provided there. So quickly on the additional Part 2 requirements, we talked about the fact that the indicative offer determines the amount of previous security that you have to provide, and that's because you will then have to submit a letter of credit or cash in an amount of $500,000 per tranche of your indicative offer at the maximum starting price. So it's proportional to your indicative offer at the maximum starting price. And for this auction, there is no additional pre-bid security. There's also various certifications, including compliance with association confidential information rules. That's given in Article 10 of the CBP rule. Roughly speaking, an association is a relationship between bidders that could prevent them from fully competing against one another. And some of the certifications that are asked for in this section of the rules is to certify that an applicant or one of the qualified bidders is not associated with another qualified bidder. And those certifications are there to promote the competitiveness of the bidding environment. There's also various certification related to the information regarding the auction that has to be kept confidential. You'll also be certifying that you agree that your bids in the auction are binding, so they become an obligation to supply those number of tranches under the terms of the Master SSO Supply Agreement, as well as agreeing not to assign any rights that you will have acquired as a function of becoming a registered bidder. Only two inserts for the Part 2 application, the certifications insert, which has all the certifications in it that's required of all bidders, and for those of you who intend on providing your pre-bid security in the form of cash, there is a cash certification insert that basically is your acknowledgement of the conditions for drawing on that cash. And that is basically our overview of the application process. In the next section, we'll talk a little bit more about how the auction format works. So talked about it generally in the overview, talked about the fact that it was a descending clock auction, and we'll give a little bit more detail now on bidding and how the auction can close. So we said it was a multiple round auction. Each round has three phases. So when the auction starts, the first round starts, the round starts in the bidding phase. There have been prices that or a price that is provided to suppliers before the start of the phase. And for the round one, those prices are the prices that are provided to registered bidders roughly 3 days before the start of the auction, at least 3 days before the start of the auction. Suppliers then, in the bidding phase, state how many tranches they want to supply at that price that's given in the round. And the price that's given in the round is the short term for that is the going price of the round. So suppliers submit their bids. They state how many tranches they want to supply. In the calculating phase, those results are tabulated. So the total number of tranches that suppliers are willing to supply at that price is calculated. And if there are more tranches that are bid than are available or needed, then the auction will proceed to the next round and the price will go down. In the reporting phase of the round, that's when suppliers get information about what happened in the round that just finished. And that information includes what the price will be in the next round, so the going price for the next round, as well as a range of excess supply. So a range meaning there's an interval of excess supply, and the exact value of the excess supply lies within that interval. So we'll talk a little bit more in detail about bidding in round one and round two. So in round one, the bid is at its simplest. It's simply a number of tranches that the bidder is willing to supply at the round one price. And the rule here is that a bidder cannot bid more than its initial eligibility. So again, we talked about this a few slides back. The initial eligibility is determined by the bidder's indicative offer at the maximum starting price. Whatever that number was that was provided in the Part 2 application, a bidder cannot bid more than that in round one. And what's more, a bidder will not be able to increase the number of tranches bid from that point on in the auction. A note that there is a possibility that the tranche target will be reduced if there's insufficient supply to ensure a competitive bidding environment. The criteria that could lead to that kind of reduction are determined prior to the auction but are not announced to bidders. Once there are certain pre-specified criteria that have been met, then that discretion to reduce the tranche target is eliminated. So at the end of round one and at the end of all other rounds in the auction, bidders are provided with information. So that's in the reporting phase of the auction. So that's a range of excess supply. So you have an example here, so where the excess supply would be between 51 and 55 tranches, and that means the exact value of excess supply is somewhere in that range, as well as the next round price, so the price for round two. And each bidder also privately, so every bidder or all bidders in the auction will see the range of excess supply and the round two price, and each bidder individually and privately will see the result of its own bid. Aside from this aggregate information that's provided to all bidders and the private information about one's own bid, a bidder has no information about eligibilities, identities, or any information about the bids of other bidders in the auction. So we talked about the fact that the price was going to decrease if there's excess supply, and the amount by which the price decreases, the percentage by which it decreases, is called the decrement. The more there's excess supply left in the auction, generally, the bigger will be the decrement. And there are formulas or tables that determine how that decrement is calculated, and that table or those formulas are provided to registered bidders in what's called the bidder user manual, which is a document that's provided with their notification. That bidder user manual will also provide the possible ranges of excess supply that will be used during the auction. Now, something to note is that although there are formulas, tables, a mechanistic way of calculating what the decrement is, the auction manager does have the discretion to override the decrement during the auction if that can help with pacing of the auction, and in such cases, the auction manager will announce that to the bidders. So we talked about bidding in round one, simply a number of tranches at the price of the round. Now, in round two and subsequent round, prices would be reduced round by round, and what a bidder can do at that point is, of course, the bidder can always leave the bid unchanged, or the bidder can reduce the number of tranches that it's willing to supply. We've said already that we cannot increase the number of tranches, so all we can do is leave it unchanged or reduce the number of tranches, and if we are reducing the number of tranches, say that then the bidder is withdrawing tranches from the auction. We had a notion in round one that a bidder could not bid above its initial eligibility determined by the indicative offer at the maximum starting price. That same concept carries through to other rounds of the auction. So a bidder more generally cannot bid more than its eligibility. In round two, its eligibility is the number of tranches it bid in round one, so the number of tranches has to stay the same or be reduced. And in round three and all subsequent rounds, the eligibility is the eligibility from the prior round, less where we subtract the number of tranches that were withdrawn from the auction. When tranches are withdrawn from the auction, then a bidder is asked for additional information. So a bid at its core is always just the number of tranches, but in addition, when a bidder is withdrawing tranches from the auction, then the bidder is asked for additional information, additional price information in this case. So a bidder can or must, in fact, provide an exit price, which is the last and best offer for the tranches that are being withdrawn. So in the example that we have here, a bidder was willing to bid at $70 per megawatt hour, three tranches, but only two tranches when the price was lowered to $75.75. So the question is, what is the last and best offer for the tranche that is no longer being bid? Well, it has to be above $65.75 because the bidder is not willing to bid it there. It could be right up to $70, and therefore the exit price that is provided has to be above the current going price, $65.75 in this case, and below or equal to the previous going price. So the auction will continue in this way, with bidders either maintaining their bids or withdrawing some tranches in the auction as long as there are excess supply. So as long as there are more tranches bid than there are available. So when the auction closes and we no longer have excess supply, then we will determine a uniform price that will be the auction clearing price. And there's two cases here. If the number of tranches bid is exactly equal to the number of tranches available, then the auction clearing price will be the price in that final round. If there are fewer tranches bid than there are available, then the auction clearing price will be the lowest exit price at which all tranches available are filled. So on this slide, we have an example that shows how that exit price and that auction clearing price is determined in that second case, where we go from having too many tranches bid to too few. So in this example, in round 11, you have, for illustrative purposes only, the bids of three bidders, total number bid of 19 for a target of 17, which means we have two tranches of excess supply. But in round 12, when the price is reduced from $39.42 to $38.68, then there are too few tranches, so we're short three tranches. So in that case, to fill the target of 17 tranches, basically we take the bids in price order. So we take the 14 tranches that are bid at the going price of $38.68 first, and then we would take the tranches that are at the lowest of the exit prices that are submitted, which are two tranches at $38.69, but that's still insufficient, so not all of the target is filled, so we would take one additional tranche at $38.99, and that would be the lowest exit price at which all of the tranches in the target is filled, and that would then be the auction clearing price in this case. So that's all at a showing the rules at a broad kind of conceptual level in terms of how bids are actually submitted in the auction. Bids are submitted online using auction software, and part of the materials that we provide to bidder is a software manual that has screenshots and shows how each of the bid sequences work within the auction software. Your opportunity to practice this online bidding process is Friday, October 28th, and we certainly encourage you to take that opportunity and have a look at the auction software and put in all the practice bids that you can on that day. Now, anytime there's an online process, there's always a backup. So in this case, the backup procedure is by phone. So if you experience difficulties with the auction software, you can phone a technical assistant, and the technical assistant will submit the bid on your behalf. So the technical assistant is basically submitting the bid through the auction software. So eventually all the bids are always put through the auction software. It's a question of whether you can do it on your own from bidding from your usual place of business, or whether you need the help of one of our technical assistants to enter the bid within the auction software. So the last bid that is submitted and verified in the bidding phase and processed by the auction software is the bid that counts. And what that means is that while the bidding phase is open, you can have a bid that's submitted, that's the first step, verified, that's the second step in the auction software, and there's always those two steps. And you could change your mind or decide that you want to revise your bid in some way, and you can always do that while the bidding phase is open. If there are multiple bids that are submitted then the bid that counts is the last bid submitted and verified in the bidding phase and processed by the auction software. And that's true for a bid that you submit or that is submitted by a technical assistant. Same thing as I explained when you use the backup bid procedure. All it means is it's someone else that's putting the bid in the auction software on your behalf. We will be providing a schedule for the auction where that will give you the times where the bidding phase of each round will occur, and it is your responsibility to submit a bid on time during that bidding phase, and it is your responsibility also to ascertain the systems that you need to minimize the chance that you will have technical difficulties that could impair your ability to bid in the auction. If you're providing a backup bid, it's also your responsibility when you speak to our technical assistant to provide a complete bid. So, for example, providing an exit price and that bid be consistent with the CBP rules, for example, that the exit price be in the correct range. To submit bids through the auction software, there's no special software to download on your machine or anything like that. It will be through a website and a link that we will provide to you. And on your side, what you need is just a standard PC and a standard operating system, including Windows 7, Windows 8, Windows 10, or Mac OS 10.7. Of course, you will need an internet connection. You could, for example, have primary access through your company's network as well as secondary access through an alternative internet service provider. You will need to use a supported web browser, which will be Internet Explorer 9 or later, as well as the most recent version of Firefox or Safari. As we said, it's your responsibility to determine what systems you need to make sure that you minimize your chance of technical difficulties that could impair your ability to bid. You may want to consider having backup equipment, such as backup laptop and backup connection, or having individuals from your team in two geographical locations to minimize those difficulties. In the last portion of this presentation, just a reminder that your central place for information regarding the AEP Ohio CBP is the website, AEPOhioCBP.com, and you have on the left-hand side of the website the navigation bar where you can go to the information tab to get documents and to the data room to get data, and you have key dates and the most recent announcements that are on the right-hand side of the page. So as I mentioned, and as we mentioned at the very beginning, that there were governing documents for this process. Those documents are on the document page under the information tab. Those include the CBP rules that we've been discussing, as well as the master SSO supply agreement, and also include other documents that are relevant to your participation. I also mentioned that there's a data room in which AEP Ohio provides data that's updated on a monthly basis. It's updated on the 20th of each month. It includes hourly energy, customer counts, PLC and SPL data, switching statistics, et cetera. So you will get the information you need, the data you need on the data room tab. Finally, if you have questions at any point during the process, we invite you to submit your question through the CBP website. So again, through the Contact Us tab, there is an Ask a Question link, and you can provide your name, company email address, and then provide your question, and we respond to questions by email. So answer goes back to the questioner via email, typically within 2 business days, at which point both the question and the response is posted as an FAQ on the CBP website for the benefit of all bidders. You can also contact us via email at aap-cbp@nara.com. Finally, we mentioned that it was just one piece of the application that was potentially in hard copy, and that is the pre-bid letter credit. So if you're submitting your pre-bid security using a pre-bid letter credit, on this slide you have a reminder of the mailing address for delivery of that pre-bid letter credit at the auction manager team. And that concludes the presentation portion of this presentation.